Tribute. Turning by Marilyn Court Lewis.
He never talked about his life, although it had been an interesting life. It was as though we never really knew who he was. He had gone to Canada in the 1930s, leaving the farm to go and look for work, the youngest but one of five brothers. Once, he told us how he and some companions had been discovered sleeping rough in a railroad carriage by a member of the Canadian Mounted Police. The Mountie had stuck the barrel of a gun against the edge of the truck door and slid it open to reveal a group of frightened, unwashed men staring back at him. They were lucky, he said. The Mountie had not arrested them for trespassing on railroad property, as he could have done, but had told them all roughly to clear out quick. Then there were the one or two stories of his life as a boy on the farm, driving cattle to market with his father along the old drovers' roads that still exist in Wales to this day. He would bring it all back to life as he related some hilarious incident, usually involving cattle that wouldn't be driven where he wanted them, with chaotic consequences, and he would laugh in those moments as though he were still there. He would laugh till the tears came. And I think the tears were tears of grief. I didn't recognise him that night, bathed in the circle of yellow light given off by the lamp halfway down the hushed hospital ward. His face was crooked and cracked, like a fractured tree finally fallen. The nurse led us to his bedside. My sister stood on the far side of the bed, watching me with malicious curiosity. I looked at his haggard face, raked in the glare of the light, and hardened my heart. It was a horrible, cold light that made the skin appear translucent and the face sunken and hollow-eyed. It was as though rigor mortis had started to set in and was staking its claim to certain parts of the body before the occupant was ready to leave. I stood looking at the tortured face that was supposed to be that of my father and didn't know what to feel. I had carried this man's pain all my life, and now I was witnessing his final struggle. I could only watch. I bent forward. The nurse had told him we were here. "Dad," I said. The word sounded unfamiliar. "Hello, Dad." The eyes snapped open and pierced searchingly through the glare. The lips clamped tightly in rigid fury. There was no more to it that night. He didn't speak, but his face had visibly relaxed after about 10 minutes of sitting silently there beside him. My sister fidgeted and then urged us to go and leave him now, and we could come back again in the morning. My father took 8 days to die after that night, and there were 3 things he said to me in that time, individually spanned apart. The first came the following day and was in character with the father that I knew. "I'm annoyed," he said. "Are you?" I stated in reply. 2 days later, he spoke again. This time his sisters from the farm were there. He was surrounded for the first time in years by all the 4 women of his later life, those women that he had needed so much and had utterly hated. This time I didn't recognise the tone at all. I was sitting next to him. We 4 women had been talking. He had been quietly involved with clearing the fencing as he slid back through the tunnel of memory. Suddenly he became conscious of us all being there. He looked stricken. I leaned forward. "I'm old," he said, aghast. I felt bewildered and realised again that this was his business and I was a mere spectator now. He was turning into a baby. His body was curling up all small and pink. I started to think he might recover. He looked so well. He didn't see us now but seemed to be happier when we were there. He looked rosy. but occasionally the old anguish would come through and he would shout out. The tone of his last statement was dreadful. "I'm afraid," he said to me. And it reverberated around the corridor of my memory forever. This time I tried to reach him. I tushed and I soothed and I held his hand, and I told him that he had no need to be afraid, not him. I had known his trials. He had sailed through every one. He had no need to be forgiven. We left him soon after. My sister was becoming impatient with his lingering and wanted to drive back to London. She had spoken with the nurse in her office and left the telephone number of her house. But we both knew that when the call came, it would be a formality. And never again would we talk about him. Because we would never talk at all. He had divided us a long time ago. My sister would follow the steady path upon which she had been set, and I would live an interesting life for which I was unprepared.